You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi everybody, this is the Cricket Badger podcast.
Each badger marks the track with its own scent.
His black legs are short but very powerful for digging. The name badger probably comes from the French word bêcher, meaning digger.
Hello, everybody. Welcome along, Cricket Badger Podcast. It's been a while, hasn't it? Hello out there, all the badgers around the UK and around the world. And we join you today. It's Phil and Mark alongside me, James. And we're going to be talking a bit about England and New Zealand, England's test squad they've picked, and merging that into a chat as we go through about the first half of the county championship season. How have that has gone? And how we see that going forwards. And I guess the strength of the county championship with all of the comments about franchising it and what have you. I'm sure there's plenty to talk about as we go through this. But let's start off with the England-New Zealand test series coming up. And Mark, I think a lot of people thought, well, Rob Key coming in as director of cricket, you've got a new head coach in Brendan McCullum, and then you've got a new captain in Ben Stokes. That would automatically lead us to a revolution and a complete load of fresh faces in that squad. As it turns out, there's only Potts of Durham in the bowling department and Harry Brook, who's forced his way into the batting conversation, that's any different, really. Was that a surprise to you?
No, it wasn't a surprise to me, actually. I think they have, apparently they're going to go to a national selector. They haven't got a national selector in place yet. Brendan McCullum wasn't even in the country when they picked the side, or he was in isolation. Stokes has just got the job. Key has just got his job. I can't see any of them really watched a huge amount of county cricket this season, if I'm being honest. So I think a conservative choice was always going to be the choice. I think the injuries to all the strike bowlers have not helped. Obviously, Anderson and Broad are back in, quite rightly so. In terms of the batting, I think Crawley's a lucky boy. In terms of the bowling, I think Craig Overton is lucky as well. But I think what they're looking at is, okay, yeah, there's been a run fest in the county championship, but if we take the last test series in West Indies, Crawley did get a ton in the second test. Jack Leach, you know, probably bowled as, you know, got some control and bowled a lot of overs and improved as time went by. Craig Overton, okay, didn't do so well, but he deserves a run in England. So I think all those kind of, you know, well, they did okay in the West Indies. I know we didn't win, but we need to give them the chance over here. Obviously, Lee's had a run in the West Indies. So I think it was quite predictable, really. Obviously, I would have liked someone like Parkinson to get a go, but that's a perennial thing. And if I'm being honest with you, a lot of runs have been scored in the championship, but how you decipher on some of the tracks we've been playing on how much store you put place by those runs, I don't know. And a lot of the batsmen are much of a muchness. So I think it was inevitable to come to a conservative conculusion. And Matt McCullum, when he comes over, will probably start working from this point and see how we go.
I think McCullum said in the past when he took over at KKR and in the Caribbean in his other two coaching jobs, he said, I kind of watched, I got my feet under the table, a bit like Erik ten Hag. I saw his press conference for Manchester United today. Yeah, I'm analysing, I'm just kind of observing at the moment. And then after you've kind of soaked up all the information, you then make a few decisions, don't you? And I imagine Brendan McCullum will be no different when it comes to coaching England. Phil was, I don't think Ben Stokes was any surprise. He wasn't necessarily my choice, but then I'm obviously a revolutionary, forward-thinking, incredible person. But the Ben Stokes was pretty obvious vice captain, and the only other player in the team really that was guaranteed to be picked. So that wasn't particularly astonishing, was it? But Rob Key is the director of cricket, and Brendan McCullum as the head coach for the Test team. Are those two surprise you?
Certainly, both of them are a surprise. Rob Key is a surprise because I think Mark's made this point repeatedly. He doesn't seem to tick many of the declared criteria, but. I mean, we don't know how he interviewed, what he's offering. I mean, he comes across as a pundit. He's fantastic. Straight
just,
talking.
Just pleasant. On that, Phil. Mark set himself up on our WhatsApp group as the HR department, and you're obviously in the legal profession. If you advertise a job, and you obviously have the factors that you want people to tick the boxes for as part of the job description, if you don't get that many applicants. And you are desperately keen to actually employ somebody quickly because you need to get the show on the road. Is Rob Key the only possible appointment, or are we being harsh on him?
I don't know. We know that Gary Kirsten interviewed. Do we know who else interviewed?
Gary Kirsten interviewed for the
director. No, sorry, he didn't. That's for McCollum's role. Who else interviewed with Rob Key? It's
hard don't know.
To know.
Marcus North interviewed, but he dropped out.
Yeah. So, I mean, if assuming that they're the people that got through to the final round, then, I mean, he sounds like the most likely candidate, but people have been prepared to employ me. I'm not quite sure why. I seem to have got away with it. So, I mean,
that's the best point you've ever made on this podcast.
Exactly, yeah. look, when he talks cricket, he seems to talk common sense. He's been in and around the game. The difficulty, I think, for him is the lack of direct coaching experience. But then at this level, should he be coaching? It's not about technicals at this point, surely. It's about man management. It's about processes. It's about giving the team the very best opportunities. It's almost administrator, isn't it, really? It's more administration than cricket at this stage.
You are listening to the Cricket Badger podcast.
I think, Mark, I kind of went through it initially and I thought, this is really weird because Ben Stokes is only captain once, I think, in Red Bull cricket. Brendan McCullum's never coached in Red Bull cricket. Rob Key's never had a position like that. But maybe this is what England needs. You know, we've gone down the route of the blokes that have got the ties on and fit the bill. Could this be a refreshing change?
Well, we'll soon find out, won't we? I think the Guardian guy, Barney Roney, kind of wrote a very good piece about, you know, how we've gone from the ties to the marketing men to the blokes, and we were all into yoga and getting the mental health stuff and all the rest of it. So we'll see. I mean, to a certain degree, Key does not fit the essential criteria. Neither does McCullum. Maybe they should have re-advertised. I don't know, but the fact is they're in the jobs now. We hope they do well. It could be.
But if they've gone down your route, Mark, of re-advertising, we could still be sat here in September with no suitable.
So, I mean, you know, but I think the thing that worries me is that they make such song and dance about equality, diversity and inclusion. The first big jobs that they actually advertise, they don't follow any of the procedures, which, you know, is fine if you just use headhunters and say, well, we're just looking for the best candidate. But once you advertise it and say these are the essential criteria, and then you give people the jobs who haven't got the essential criteria, it just makes a mockery of it. But I'm not going to go, there's no point in arguing about that. Key's got the job. McCullum's got the job. I hope they do well. I mean, you know, I think Phil's right. Rob Key talks a lot of sense as a commentator.
I've heard him interviewed a lot. Nasser Hussain did a very good interview with him after he'd been appointed and asked him, I think as they trust each other, obviously, as having worked together. And so he asked him the hard questions and all of his answers made a lot of sense. I think we've got a chord here, haven't we? They may not have been the choices we'd have made, but we wish them well because they're in situ and they're going to do the job.
Yeah, I wish him well. I think Key genuinely sounds like a good guy. Sounds like he knows the game. I don't think he's going to make any snap judgments about the count again. He's a big fan of the 100, but most of them are. McCullum, You know, he's an experienced Test match captain. He did a great job in New Zealand. You know, he might be a punt in the dark, but as you say, he may well. They've been down every other avenue, haven't they? So why not? I mean, why not? You know, give it a go and see what happens.
You say Rob Key's a fan of the 100. They're always fans of the 100 when they're in the skybox. He might be different now he's out of it. Well, proof will be in the pudding as we go through, won't it? Because I'm sure he's going to be involved in discussions at the very least in terms of the future structure of the English county scene. In terms of the actual players and the personnel then, not a huge surprise about who was picked. But I get the impression, as we've said, that this is almost like last chance saloon for a few of these guys. Phil, yeah, this is your chance now. Go out there. You haven't got the excuse of COVID bubbles. Rob Key's been quite big on how that's affected them, particularly during the Ashes, and, you know, as a mitigating factor and as an excuse. But he said, you know, we've got to the stage now where there aren't any excuses left. You know, this is now a summer, a fresh summer. Go out there and show what you can do. And this is their test now. This is their chance, isn't it?
I'm not sure it is the last chance for people. I'm not sure. We've gone from, I remember back when I was a kid, we would change lineups from one test to the next, and you really
like
had
Fred
one chance to go
like
get
Fred Truman.
Back in the day, yeah. now people, I think it's gone a bit too much the other way. I'm not sure there's enough jeopardy in performances enough jeopardy in performing below par because there's.
I'll ask you about that because I suggested a couple of changes. I, to be honest, a lot of me is in agreement with Mark that, you know, it makes sense at the moment to pick largely the same people and then see how it goes. But somebody said to me, well, you can't make too many changes. They're all centrally contracted. You're paying them a fortune. You're effectively flushing the money down the toilet if you don't pick them. Central contracts, I think, have a very big upside, but there's also the downside that they can be a bit cozy, Phil.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the nail on the head. You're financially committed to these players, and at least for the term of that contract, it doesn't matter how they perform. I mean, well, actually, I suppose there may be terms in there we're not aware of, but I'm not aware of any player that's lost their central contract because of their lack of form.
I think they get dropped and then they lose it when they come to renegotiate them in the autumn, don't they?
Yeah, but that... yes, it does. Well, I suppose anybody... You want someone to have the comfort of knowing that they are financially sound and they're not in a precarious position. Otherwise, you end up with instances like, noble spot fixing, etc. So, and perhaps undue pressure on players. But where we are at the moment, it does seem very comfortable. And I think it's very comfortable with both bat and ball, where individuals seemingly have got endless chances. And I don't know if it's in my impatience as a fan. This might be the series in which, you know, Ollie Robinson steps up or Craig Overton looks more menacing. But I do wonder, again, it's all well and good. We'll chuck the ball to Chris Wokes and he'll perform at home again, and we'll pick him for an away tour and it won't work again. It's getting a little bit monotonous now, having the same players in. And with the new regime that's come in, it would be nice to have seen a few more fresh faces just to have that, bring that energy into the group. Because, I mean, it's been a bit more, I'd said on the group, when you suggested a podcast, I think last week, that I'm grumpy. I'm not in the best place for cricket at the moment. And the England squad was a bit disappointing. The way they announced it, so you had to sign up.
I didn't like that.
Harvest all your data. That just pissed me off even more, quite frankly. And there's just a bit of a stink around it at the moment. I'm hoping that Key and I like McCullum. I quite like his attitude. I like the way he comes across. I hope that presents itself in the way he sets the team up. Because I am quite excited by him. I like Key in a different way, but McCullum actually excites me. But he is completely untested in this type of arena. It's not like he's known for his test batting. Everyone thinks of McCullum as a one-day specialist.
He played quite a lot of test matches, though, didn't he? He's vastly experienced in his format.
Yeah, and that's the that's the riposte to that point. But we know him for his explosive one-day play. But, you know, what I'm hoping he'll bring is that competitiveness, that positive aggression that I think we've lacked in the team. And I'm hoping he's not going to tolerate some of the limp, rather mild-mannered performances that became apparent, particularly in the Ashes and perhaps to a lesser extent in the West Indies. Ollie Robinson bowling at 70 miles an hour again, I hope won't be repeated under this regime.
badgers are furry creatures. 85% of women badgers think bad grooming is a major turn-off. 80% of women badgers think men should trim below the belt. 89% of men think good grooming is essential to their professional success. Don't just dismiss it out of hand. Get on there, manscaped.com. Check out their great range of male grooming accessories. Hygiene, appearance, attractiveness, confidence. Simply go to manscaped.com, quote the discount code BADGER. You get 20% off, you get free shipping, and you get some seriously quality equipment. Manscaped.com. Together, we save balls. Mark, kind of moving forward, new regime, new ideas, yeah, potentially new personnel. We potentially need to be a little bit patient with these guys, don't we? In terms of hitting the ground running, then you maybe not get the new manager bounce that you get in some football teams. But how patient can we be? How much time have these gentlemen got to turn things around and actually get England winning again?
Yeah, McCullum and Key are the players, are both.
Yeah, because it's not an easy summer. You know, you've got New Zealand, good side. You've got India for a one-off test match, very good side. And South Africa, very, you know, up and coming and getting back to where they used to be.
I think for the management team, obviously, it's a long-term project. McCullum's got a four-year deal, which is a long time, you know, because coaches come and go these days in international cricket, you know, like football managers. So four-year contracts is a commitment by England. I think Key's got a similar tenure, so you've got to give them time. I think in terms of the players, as I say, I think these are different. I mean, New Zealand are going to be a tough. If England think they can go to Lords and produce a, you know, a green top to suit Anderson and Broad and Overton, well, New Zealand have got equally good as firepower in their kind of artillery. So it's going to be very interesting how England sets up the pitches for this Test series because you know, New Zealand's strength is their pace attack. England's is their pace attack. What are England's weaknesses? Their batting. New Zealand's not really got a huge amount of weakness in the batting. As far as England's players are concerned, we've got Pope at three. Now, they put him at three. There's been a lot of conjecture about whether they should have done that. I think for Ollie Pope, he should see it as an opportunity because if you consider yourself one of the best players in the side, you should bat three or four. So Ollie Pope has an opportunity. Apparently, I haven't seen him bat this year. He has refined his technique. It's simpler. Hopefully, they will talk about him about his mentality of test match batting, which got completely frenetic. But he's got the talent. He's been put at three, and he's got an opportunity. He needs to grasp it. I don't agree with the people saying he's never batted at three. Here's his opportunity. He's played 20-odd tests. There's his opportunity. So he's got to be given a run.
I thought, Mark, as well, with Ollie Pope, my initial reaction was, what on earth are you doing? This guy's never been above four in the order, and that was only because England shoehorned him in at four rather than where he was at Surrey. But like you say, I've kind of turned around a little bit because I think he's a terrific player, got terrific potential, already a terrific player at county level. And you mentioned the word frenetic there. For me, Ollie Pope walks to the crease and his brain's going at a million miles an hour. He's playing at balls that maybe he should leave alone. He scores a beautiful 24, couple of cover drives and a couple of clips off the toes, and then he's out. And that's what we've had from Ollie Pope so far. But this is now, if he can get himself into a mindset of a number three where he thinks about, I don't have to be express pace. The ball's going to be harder. So if he plays an attacking shot, he's possibly going to get value for the shot anyway. But if he adds a few more leave alone shots and thinks, well, I need to be there at lunchtime and tea time and gets that kind of test match mindset in there, then he might actually improve as a result of that, Mark.
Well, yeah, that's his opportunity. He steps up to see if he's got that mentality to do it because this is a huge opportunity to bat as England's number three. Why not just take it? If you look at all the other candidates they talked about Josh Bohannon. Josh Bohannon's only got four first-class centuries. Ollie Pope's got more ability than Josh Bohannon, simple as that. Pope seemingly has, outside of the lad at Yorkshire Brook, more natural ability than a lot of our batsmen that I've seen anyway. So why not give him a go? He has to adapt his game. But any successful player in any side, wherever they play, will have to adapt the game at some point in their career. So Pope's got to be given a run. Root cemented at four, great. Number five, we'll see how long Bairstow lasts in terms of his longevity. I mean, playing four formats. He's got form, so he deserves his place. But Brook, is there waiting. Stokes is actually sick. So in a sense, you've got the essence. We see how the openers go, of course. We could be 10 for 2. But, we've got the essence of a top six there that I think they'll try and persevere with. Crawley has to get some runs. Crawley's the most vulnerable. If he flunks out, and I've no real confidence in him as an opener.
He's not vulnerable, mate. He is bulletproof. Now Key's in, that boy is bulletproof.
Maybe he's bulletproof at the moment, but if he doesn't get any runs and he keeps nicking off in the way he has been doing, then he's obviously vulnerable. The bowlers will have to wait and see. There's that many injured that the attack is what it is, isn't it? I mean, Craig Overton's a lucky boy. I think his brewer would have given him a bit more of a point of difference, and he's not much more different as a bat.
I heard somebody saying, from Surrey talking about Jamie Overton, and is it Azam Mahmood who's a bowling coach down at Surrey, had said he's not quite ready yet. He's still not quite consistent enough in terms of his lines and lengths.
He's 28 years of age. When is he going to be ready?
Maybe he's never going to be ready.
Well, until you play him, you don't know, do you? But he's been playing first-class cricket for 10 years. He bowls at 90 miles an hour. He's fit now. He's bowling well. So if he's ever going to make the step up, it's now, when England are in a bit of a flux.
Let's just stick to the batting for now. I've just jotted down here these six names in terms of middle order batsmen. Let's forget the openers because that's a podcast in itself, isn't it? But Bairstow, Pope, Brook, Root, Lawrence and Stokes, Phil. To me, yes, you can pick bones in them. Yes, they haven't always performed. Yes, they could do better. And yes, they might do better. But to me, they're probably the six best batsmen in the country at the moment. And they probably deserve their place and a chance to shine, don't they? Right the wrongs, maybe.
Yeah, I just worry if they're all... Well, I think what we lack there is an obvious number three. And Root at four, I understand. I think you'd like them all coming in... I think I'd like them all coming in at five or six. That's the problem.
Well, so, somebody tweeted me, Phil, and said, why don't we just call them all number fives? So we lose the first wicket and everybody else is at number five.
Yeah, I mean, that's my worry about Pope at three, is that you're asking someone who's struggled. Well, perhaps struggle's not the right word, but they're not firing on all cylinders. To then adapt, as Mark rightly describes it, from a position not of dominance or of positivity. They're being asked to adapt their game whilst it's already not flourishing. And I just think the reality is that he's likely to be effectively opening for much of what we're doing. But yeah, I mean, worries about Lawrence. He's had his injuries. He got that 120 against, who was it, Mark?
I watched it, mate, against Lancashire, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. I forgot all about that. He had a good game there. This hamstring's recurred now twice in two or three weeks. So I think he might have to rest that. So it may well be that he's not going to make it back for this test match. But it's nice to see him get a few runs the other day. Obviously, I'm a big fan of his. But it's difficult to think of anybody else that would come in. There's been a few performances and around, but no one has really, really stood out. It'd be nice to see Harry Brook play. I don't know much about him, but obviously everybody's waxing lyrical about him at the moment. So it'd be nice to see him.
Is it a shame that we... Because what they've said is... Or the word on the street, Huggy Bear, seems to be that Harry Brook's been told he's the reserve in the squad, and that basically the top seven looks set to be Lees, Crawley, Pope coming in at three, Root at four, Bairstow's at five, Stokes is at six, and Folks is the keeper. That's, you know, if you're going to pick that for the first test, the chances are, even if it's a disaster, you're going to pick that for the second test as well, because you're going to give him a couple of games, aren't you, at the start of a series. Is it unfair on Harry Brook, who's obviously a multi-dimensional cricketer and plays white ball too, to take him out of the blast, Mark, and take him away from Yorkshire to carry drinks?
I don't think... Well, is it? He's going to be taken away from the blast. He's going to be put in a different environment. No, I think it's a good thing for him to be around the England environment. I don't really... I mean, playing in the blast, he's proved what he can do in the blast. We need him to see it around the test match environment. They may well release him for part of the blast anyway. They'll probably release him at some point to play the blast.
England have taken Parkinson around the world twice in the last two winters and had him for a lot of the summers as well.
I think they'll probably release him for some of the blast if he's over here and he's not playing, obviously. But I think it's right if he's with the squad for this particular test match. They need to see if a look at him in the nets. They've got a new coach coming over. He'll need to get to know him. The management team will need to get to know him. They've obviously identified him. They want to see what he's like in the nets. See what he's like as a person, as an individual. They talk a lot these days about not just being around the ability, about being able to integrate into the group and what you bring to the group. So all those questions about your soft skills are actually just as important as your hard skills now in cricket.
Yeah.
Because if you're not, if you haven't got them, then you don't get picked.
You get picked. And quite rightly to some degree, Mark, because you spend so much time as a cricketer with those other people. You've got to fit into that group, haven't you?
Yes and no. You don't want people to be completely awkward and recalcitrant all the time. But any good management team should be able to manage difficult individuals, because quite often your most difficult individuals are your best players or your best people.
That's why we've put Phil in the middle.
So, yeah, there you go.
Manage him from either side.
Look, I mean, Peterson, Jeffrey Boycott in the past, you know, even to a certain degree, James Anderson recently. You know, you have to get the best out of these people, but you do, you know, but ideally you don't want too many of them, because it creates chaos, as we've seen in county sides like Yorkshire in the 70s and 80s, for example. You need the right mix, but obviously they're looking for people with the right mentality. But every team needs a maverick, and if you cannot manage a maverick, then it says more about your poor management than it does the maverick, in my opinion.
I'm going to ask you a question now, and I just want a yes or no answer. Any surprise to you, Phil, that Stuart Broad and Jimmy Anderson are back in the squad?
No.
Mark?
No.
We don't need to talk about them. We know all about them, don't we? And they're back in the squad. Last question when it comes to England for now. We've seen basically a succession of Matthew Fisher, Saqib Mahmood, Jofra Archer's been out for, feels like, about 2 years now. Stress fractures in backs, injuries, loads and loads of kind of amateur medical thoughts of both ex-players and people like me and supporters in terms of why this happens. But it's not good, is it, Phil? You know, from any, however you look at it, with all of the science around at the moment, I my personal opinion is that there is actually too much science around at the moment, that they actually try and get, they're getting too gym fit and not enough cricket fit, and they're not actually playing enough, because the bowling action is so strange. It's not something you do in any other walk of life, running in, going sideways and bowling a ball, because you throw a ball usually, don't you? If you're going to try and take a missile and put it over there, you throw it. So it's a completely, and the stresses that go through that body are unique to cricket. And I don't think they actually play enough, because you groove that action, you get that action stronger, and that's where you stay fit. And to me, they kind of, all of this resting and wrapping people in cotton wool for 4 weeks and then playing a one-off game, I don't necessarily think it does them any good.
You use different muscles to bowl wicketkeep, and anyone can tell you that. Anyone that's had the misery of the day after they've been asked to go in and keep for 40 overs or bowl 8 overs off after not having done it for God knows how long, so then come in and be walking like John Wayne the next day because you've used muscles you've not used for goodness knows how long.
I kept wicket about 25 years ago for 140 over game, and I'm still feeling it.
Still, yeah, absolutely. It's I've been the shadow of a man I was since Friday, and I'm meant to be playing tomorrow as well. And it's, yeah, I mean, Mark's got strong views on this, on the number of overs they bowl. I do wonder if we are now so concentrated on being as quick and squeezing every bit of pace out of players we can that we are adding to the issue. But I'm no sports scientist. And the difficulty with this conversation is that there are, and England have plenty of them, of experts who are there meant to be giving top-end advice on this subject. But it's difficult to understand how someone like Jofra Archer can pick up a stress fracture. Or is it a lumbar stress fracture? And that either not be detected or develop whilst he's recovering from before. It just doesn't make sense. Either it should have been detected earlier, or they're doing something wrong in his recovery. There's something that needs explanation, but I've cross-examined a few experts in my time, but I definitely feel I'd need to do some brushing up before I ask any questions on this subject.
I know, I don't want to name the county or the people involved in this, it's not fair, but I know that at one county there was a bit of a standoff between strength and conditioning coach and the bowling coach and co, because of what I've just said, that, you know, the bowling coaches wanted a bowler to be fit and be able to bowl, and it seemed the strength and conditioning coach wanted them to go through X amount of exercises in the gym every day and be fit in terms of having a six-pack and wide, broad shoulders. And they don't necessarily meet in the middle, Mark, do they? You know, there's a difference between being all ripped and muscly and being bowling fit. And I know you go to the gym a lot, and you're very ripped and muscly.
Well, I used to do a lot of bowling, but not muscly. But yeah, there is. I think it's a complex debate. I think let's not get into eulogising about the good old days, because bowlers have always got injured. Dennis Lilly.
We forget that, don't we?
Yeah, we forget that. I mean, there've always been injuries. Bowlers, sometimes people like Chris Old, Mike Hendrick, Chris Old could get injured just, you know, walking to his car. So, I mean, people have always been injured. And it may well be that people like Satch and Archer are just injury prone. But I think we've got to a situation where nobody really knows what's best for the players. So you do have these strength and conditioning coaches that are in the gym. I mean, they've got 12-month contracts. They're in the gym all winter. They're in, you know, so why they, it's just, so they do need to bowl more. I think the other argument is, that's quite an interesting argument, actually, about my mood. So I'd say, you know, I've had a conversation with somebody on Twitter the other day. He'd only bowled 25 first-class matches and so forth. They said, well, he's been in so many 2020 leagues and he's been to the Big Bash and then he went to England. And they are playing more formats. And whether that puts an extra strain on the body, who knows? And, you know, whether the 2020, whether it is more hyped up and they're running around more, I don't know. But it does, I mean, to me, they don't bowl enough. That's absolutely paramount to me. If you are a bowler, feels right, you are using different muscles. It's about repetition. You know, you need to repetition. Your body needs to get used to it. So if you come out of a gym and start bowling, your body's not going to be used to it. You're going to break down. You need to do it slightly more. And stress fractures don't, you know, sometimes you get an acute stress fracture and just happens like that. But very often stress fractures, you know, they develop over time. That's why bowlers are scanned more these days, because they pick them up. So God knows what they were doing with Archer. I mean, Mahmood's been scanned to death, so they probably picked these up reasonably early, which is good for him. But if they haven't picked Archers up, God, if either, you know, I just don't know. But for me, they need to do more bowling. I don't want them bowling 60 overs a week. And, you know, I don't want 66 back-to-back matches. But the body needs to get used to bowling more. And to me, that's not what they're doing. If you look at all the best bowlers, they've all said in the past, all the best bowlers, they've all enjoyed bowling and they've learned how to bowl. Their actions have been refined. And they learn, and they get bowling fit by bowling. And let's face it, you know, when we talk about stress and strain, you know, the West Indian fast bowlers, they used to come over to county cricket and bowl 700, 800 overs. Malcolm Marshall, Joel Garner, yeah. Sylvester Clark. They never got injured.
Well, you know, we talk about Stuart Broad and Jimmy Anderson. They've bowled ridiculous numbers of overs in their careers, and they whenever we talk about them being rested, I mean, I'm kind of a bit of a believer in actually rotating them now through the twilight of their career. But you can guarantee, as soon as you say to Stuart Broad or Jimmy Anderson, we're not going to play you at Lords, we'll play you in the next one instead, they'll say, well, I want to play at Lords. They want to play the next game. They want to play in bowl.
They want to play other games. They can. They're too old to play other games. We get that. But, you know, you don't want to be flogging all, you know, particularly fast bowlers, you don't want to be flogging them to death. There's a happy medium to be found. But, you know, you've got to find that medium, and it's gone too far at the moment. They're not bowling enough overs, essentially. And that's it. Mahmood's played 25 first-class games. He bowls in shorter formats. So, you know, they're not bowling. They're not bowling fit. The bodies aren't right for bowling. They may be fit young men, but they're not bowlers. And that's what I think is the essence of why it's happening.
So I mean, I feel for Saqib, I feel for Matty Fisher as well. They've kind of just got their chances and now they're injured for the rest of the season. But, you know, thinking about Fish at Yorkshire, I don't think he's actually played a full season because there's always an injury or a niggle of some kind. And
I mean, the other thing is to say, oh, you get people on Twitter, played too much county cricket. You know, they bowl too much in county cricket. Fisher's only bowled in one innings. Mahmood's only bowled in one match. So there's not the direct correlation. And actually, bowlers like Tom Bailey, who plays for Lancashire, can play every game and not pick up an injury, or certainly not a back injury. And again, he bowls a lot of overs.
I'm not going to ask you this question because I know you've been to cricket this season because I was sat behind you. But have you been to see any county cricket yet, Phil?
No, not been there. No, I've been streaming a lot. Been watching a lot of the streams, which has been really handy. And it's amazing how many people don't know about the streams because the number of people I've had to refer to them, oh, can I watch it there? And they've been well into it thereafter. Even the kids actually have been into it. So the streams have been an invaluable source.
Yeah, I've tried to retweet that grid thing every now and again because you can put more than one match on your screen at any one time, which is quite nice as well.
But the only irritating thing is Warwickshire demand that you sign up to their data list again. Another one wanting to harvest my data to send me adverts for stuff I'm not going to buy.
I think I've got your data. If anybody wants Phil's data, I can sell it.
Jacob, and I sent the Badger a message, and now I'm on the podcast with this jingle. If you would like to get in touch with the Cricket Badger podcast, then tweet @cricket_badger.
I put out a tweet yesterday to say, because it was obviously the first, the end of the first sort of tranche of county championship matches, about halfway through the season, and the summer's not even started yet. But anyway, that's another point for another day. But I said that, yeah, I'd loved it. I've been watching it on the streams. I've been to Headingley. I've been, yeah, and it's, I love 4-day cricket. I love the county championship. And there's been some tremendous matches. Got a lot of people liking that and making comments and stuff. There were a few people who said, I found it a bit boring. Too many draws, you know, too many high scoring draws. This is, you know, and I wonder what your thoughts on that are, Mark, because I think, I mean, there have been some fairly docile tracks. There have been teams batting out fairly comfortably in the fourth innings. The heavy roller presumably has a part to play in that, because that kind of deadens the track a little bit. And maybe we could look at not using the heavy roller in county championship cricket. But one of the things I always think when people say the scores are too big, the bowlers are finding it too hard, A, for most of the last 5 years, people have been saying the bowlers find it too easy. So let's give the batsmen a few runs now and again. But B, when we go to places and England concede sort of 500 in the first innings and they find it really hard to get a wicket, people always say, well, they find it too easy in the county championship. They need to find ways to take wickets. Well, at the moment, we're giving them that challenge, aren't we? And we're trying to make bowlers better in that regard.
Yeah, I think obviously, you know, county cricket gets blamed for everything. If England win, it's never county cricket's reason for winning. If England lose, it always is. So that's historically always been the case. I think the tracks this year have been very, very good. They've been like roads, some of the ones I've seen. And you have to be a very good bowler to get the wickets, which is great. You know, Hashin Ali come to Lancashire and won us some games because he's an excellent bowler. Matt Parkinson's taking wickets. And yes, I mean, I watched the Kent game versus Lancashire right at the beginning of the season at Canterbury. And Darren Stevens was basically, you could play him literally with a stick of rhubarb. There was nothing going on in the pitch. And he didn't bowl him in the second innings. So cricket is very much a game of environment. And the pitches this year have been remarkably good for the time of year. And I don't disagree with that. I think it's great that we're getting better pitches. But my gripe is that these pitches don't break up because they water them too much. So they don't deteriorate. They don't break up. If you look at a first day pitch at Old Trafford and then look at a day four pitch, there's hardly any difference in it.
Well, when you water them, Mark, and then you put the heavy roller on them, you're effectively compacting them and making them almost like first day pitches, aren't
they? They never break up. So you need a pitch to naturally deteriorate. And I think that's the problem we've got. We're getting better pitches. They're too slow. Well, that's probably to do with the time of the year and historical things in England. But if you're going to get good pitches and they're slow wickets, you need them to deteriorate naturally. Otherwise, you're going to get 500 plays, 500. And so that's what we need to work on. And stop watering the pitches too much. That we're absolutely obsessed with making the pitches as compact as possible because we're frightened to death of them breaking up. Let them deteriorate naturally. And that would produce more interesting cricket. Because I think the pitches are... I'm broadly in agreement what they've done with the pitches this year. But when in one match, I think it's when we played you lot, Yorkshire, wasn't it? Yeah, it was when we played Yorkshire.
You lot.
Every single team in the first division in the first innings got 500. And that's the first time that had happened since two divisions. So that tells you that possibly the pitch is probably too good and too slow for this time of the year, and they're not deteriorating. So, yeah, it's been some good cricket, and I've enjoyed it, and I've enjoyed, you know, Lancashire's gone to 4 days each time. I saw a four-day game at Kent, four-day game at Old Trafford. So there's been some good finishes, but you need to have really top-class bowlers to win matches. You know, we haven't got a huge amount of those in first-class cricket, but I would like the wickets to deteriorate more naturally than they are doing at the moment.
But that point you make there about not having top-class bowlers in county cricket, surely the job of the ECB and of county cricket is to generate the need to be a top-class bowler. And,
yeah, of course.
And Phil, that's the challenge. Surely the challenge is for the bowlers to get better and to make themselves a little bit more of a contest on 500, plays 500 tracks, and yeah. B, for the captains to use a bit of imagination and to hone their skills a bit more too.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why it's right that these pitches have been prepared this way, so that we can see teams have to work harder to get their wickets, because rolling in at, you know, with the dibbly dobblers at 75 to 80 miles an hour and rolling teams over isn't, I mean, it's, I mean, I'm I always preferred bowling. I'm not overly interested in batting. That's for other people to worry about. So I didn't mind seeing loads of wickets fall, but it doesn't lend itself to strong developed batting standards, and therefore it doesn't lend itself to a strong England team. And bowling standards as well. So with these better pitches, I think inevitably lead to an improvement, but it's going to be rough going for a while, because at the moment this is new to, or newer to, players are used to pitches that are going to help them out. So there's going to be a period of adjustment which we've got to go through, and there might be some boring games, but ultimately a little bit of tough love, the players will respond and the cream will hopefully rise.
I don't want you to use the word money, tradition, loyalty, anything like that in your answers, but now it's time to franchise cricket, says KP. The words loyalty, tradition, and all of those kind of history, and even money these days, and probably all the way through cricket's history, money's been important. You have to pay the bills, don't you? But those things like tradition, history, and loyalty is what actually matters most, isn't it, for a cricket fan? You get your team and you stick with them through thick and thin. That's what sport's all about. Tradition, that's something to be celebrated, learnt from, and stuck up on pavilion walls and looked after. So I don't mind if you use any of those words in your answers to this question. But Mark, KP wants to take it down to 12 teams to franchise it. I'm not sure he actually quite technically knows what the word franchise means. But is it time to reduce 18 counties? And if you say yes, then you're off this podcast. But I'm not trying to influence your answer.
I don't think it's time to reduce 18 counties. I think KP throws lots of different sticks to get a response. And if you say enough things enough times, you're going to get one thing right sometime. Totally wrong on this. I don't think franchising is going to suddenly miraculously produce a better England side. Tradition is important. I mean, you know, the county championship and history county clubs have been going 200 years. You can't just suddenly stop that. It doesn't work like that. You just, you know, you've got great grounds. I mean, got Taunton down here in the West Country, superb ground, one of the best grounds, well, the best ground for county cricket, in my opinion, in the country. So what are you going to do? You're going to start franchising that. What about the Cheltenham? So there's all different equations and different nuances that he simply doesn't get. And we're not like Australia. Australia is a huge country where you have certain states, and they have better weather as well. So, and their tradition is to have 8, 9, 10 games and play the states. They're not going to suddenly reduce their states. So I don't think we shouldn't be saying because everybody else has got less teams, then suddenly we should have less teams. Homogenisation is boring. You want some difference. What I do think he's right in, and I do think this needs addressing, is that, and I've said this consistently, that we do need to raise the quality and we do need the best playing the best more. My opinion is that county cricket was best maybe about 15 years ago, 10, 15 years ago. We had better overseas players, we had better cold patch, we had better pitches, we had better players coming through. I think a lot of those things have gone away now with central contracts, with overseas not being here much. We've diluted the quality's been diluted slightly. We've got less people participating in the game. So there is that natural decline in standards, I think, that has occurred. It hasn't helped with the scheduling and playing on bad pitches, which has reduced the quality even more. So we need to sort that out. But equally, we need to recognise that if England are going to get better, then you do need the best playing the best. And I think going back to two divisions, playing on better pitches, you've already seen that happening a little bit. And we need to look at a structure which promotes that in the future. But a structure that doesn't cut off every single county. So if you are Northampton, you have got the ability to get to the first division. We don't want to cut off those avenues, because those clubs produce players. And it may well be in the future that they continue producing players. And a little bit like football, those players move on to bigger clubs and they're loaned back for a season. And that's how the system naturally evolves. And the talent does get to the top, like you get in football to a kind of degree, if you know what I mean. He's wrong in franchising. That's completely wrong. And it'll just disinvest the game and disenfranchise complete areas of the country. However, he is right that we do need to look at standards. And me watching a lot of cricket over the years, I've watched nearly 400 first-class games live because I'm a sad man. I would say that standards have definitely declined. So I would like to look at something different that redresses that balance but at the same time retaining an 18 county structure.
Every competition should always look at be trying to raise standards. I don't think it's how you do that. And you mentioned kind of the times of the games, you mentioned pitches, there's a whole load of factors that play into that, aren't there? Which potentially aren't that relevant to this discussion, really. But in terms of the word franchise, Phil, franchise is where you create a product and you sell it off to people to then run it for you effectively, don't you? So you sell off the teams and there is no money in county championship cricket. We keep talking about the fact that everybody says subsidy. I mean, I think the counties to a large degree earn their fees and stuff from the ECB, but they get that free from the ECB to prop up county championship cricket because county championship cricket works as the foundation for international cricket, which makes the money. So the test matches that you sell the tickets, you sell the TV rights for the test matches, you get the money for that, and then that is fed into the county game because they produce the test cricketers to have the test matches in the first place. But there is not going to be a Saudi billionaire or a Texan millionaire or a Australian guy who fancies dabbling in English cricket who's going to buy a county championship franchise to get rich quick, is he? Or richer quicker.
This is why I think KP... I think he's just spouting the word franchise because he thinks it's the clever solution to it without possibly knowing quite what the ramifications for it are.
Just before you go on though, what he then follows it up with was three or five overseas and pay them big bucks. Well, where's that money coming from?
Where are the overseas coming from anyway?
Exactly, because they're playing international cricket elsewhere. So, are you suggesting that these millionaires are going to come in and prop up, buy these franchises? Then you're suggesting they're going to be spending huge amounts of money on bringing in Shaheen Shah Afridi for a full season, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It just doesn't stack up, Phil.
No, it doesn't. And this is why I'll listen to anything that will improve the situation of cricket in this country. And if someone can demonstrate that a thought out and fully developed franchise system would do it, I would listen to it. I wouldn't dismiss it out of hand. So if KP wants to suggest, or anybody else wants to suggest, a franchise system, cost it out and put it out in a paper that we can look at, and then we can judge it on its merits rather than just spouting in 140 odd characters the word franchise every so often. It seems to me that it's a no-brainer, isn't it? Quality everywhere needs to improve. It doesn't even need to be said. So how do you do it? Well,
and that's in any walk of life, not just sport, isn't it?
I mean, there's not a sport in the country not trying to improve the quality of its participants. There's not a sport on the planet, sorry, that's not trying to improve the quality of its participants and its financial position. So how do you do it? Well, KP's suggestion seems to really be, if you take the word franchise out of it, less matches. People, the better players are concentrated into stronger quality games, and that'll produce a better England team. There might be merit to that, there might not be. For me, I think the solution actually rests in trying to encourage more of the 60 million people, 70 million people in this country to play cricket. And that's at the minute where I think we're missing people that are being attracted to football, possibly off to other sports, the natural athletes. That we could turn into England cricketers are going off to other sports or other pastimes. And the way you sort that out, I think, is actually by increasing the number of counties playing and making it a sport that pulls people in so that, even if you've got a third, fourth, fifth tier Bedfordshire versus God knows who, these players are playing, they're getting into the sport, and therefore they've got an opportunity to move up, as Mark described, moving to the bigger counties as they go along. So for me, it's not franchises, it's widening the sport and widening participation.
The other thing, Phil, as well, off the back of that, obviously, is the state schools or clubs using local clubs to get cricketers from non-private school backgrounds, and also black and minority ethnic population of the country play a huge amount of club cricket, but that isn't reflected in the professional game. That has to be looked at too, give opportunity.
Just go and look at the England 11 we discussed earlier on and look how ethnically diverse that team is.
Yeah, absolutely.
You are listening to the Cricket Badger podcast.
Just to round off on that, Mark, I know I totally agree with everything both of you have said. The best playing the best gets the best cricket. you know, you can then judge people on that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I quite like Rob Key's suggestion when he was on Sky before he took the current job. He talked about having a top division with two divisions running side by side underneath that. So all 18 counties are playing the same number of games. And then if you get promoted into the top division and come down a tier if you get relegated. I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea. Three divisions, however you want to do it. There's ways and means of actually setting up the structure, isn't there? But to me, if you actually reduce the number of top teams, you're sending a message out to the UK, Mark, that there are less professional opportunities for people. So anybody who is any good at sport, and one of those sports is cricket, you're thinking, well, have I got more chance playing cricket, or have I got more chance playing football when there are 92 clubs to play for, or have I got more chance playing another sport? And also, if you're reducing the number of top teams, say you take away Durham out of the equation, does that mean Ben Stokes and Mark Wood go off and do something completely different? Two of the most popular England cricketers of current times. You take away Somerset, does that mean Marcus Trescothick never plays for England because he chooses a different career route and does something else because it's too far to drive to Bristol or something else to do what he's going to do? You've got to think about those things that, you know, you've got to grow the game. You almost need to put it under people's noses rather than actually take it further away from them.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I wouldn't be in any shape or form looking at reducing the amount of county clubs. So I don't think they need to do that. I think your point about reducing the amount of top clubs in the top division, I'm not sure if that'll put people off playing cricket. I don't think when you're 14, you necessarily start thinking that particularly. And I think you have to recognise as well that there's always been 92 football clubs. They have
the
a lot
thing
of-
with that, though, Mark, is that the if you've got, say, 10 top-tier clubs, there are obviously 110 shirts then available any one week in the championship. 18, you've got nearly twice that many. So you are limiting the opportunities of playing top-tier cricket, aren't you?
Well, we're not saying reduce 18 counties. What we're saying is that we need to look at ways of, you know, the best players playing the best players more, whether that's in two divisions as we've got now or three divisions or whatever. I don't think that really matters. I don't think that's going to put people off playing the game initially. People have ambitions. When you're a sports person, you have ambitions. You think you can get to the top. It's not, you're not going to be put off by that. You know, if you really like the game and the club that you go to is inclusive, whether that's be, you know, you're starting at a local club like Phil's club, Hornchurch, or my club in the Central Lancs League, well, not Central Lancs anymore, Heywood. As long as that club's inclusive, as long as it's got good links to the county club, I don't think 12-year-olds think, well, you know, 10 years I might not be playing in the first division. I don't think that it's about catching people's attention to the game. I think we have to recognise one other thing as well. However much we can grow cricket on a recreational basis, it's never, ever going to be the same scale as football, ever.
Oh,
and that's the difference. That's why we've got 92 clubs. That's historical as well. So I don't think that's an issue. I think if you get a better product and people can make more money at the top, I don't know, England win more. You know, the England team is still the kind of seen as a pinnacle. It doesn't matter if there's three divisions. And Ben Stokes would probably have been at Durham, and so would Mark Wood. They may have transferred. But I think it's getting that product right. It's getting it right, playing it at the right time. I don't really favour reducing the amount of games. But if we have to reduce the amount of games by a couple, if it means we play it in the bloody summer, fine. But we have to also recognise the vagaries of the English weather. You can get three games washed out like that. And then you're suddenly playing, you've got 10 games, you're playing seven. You know, those factors need to be put in. But it's a summer game. We've just said about 10 minutes ago, we've finished six games and we're at the 20th of May.
I think some teams have played seven, haven't they?
Well, one team's played six games at the 20th of May. We've got eight more to play and four of them in September. That's the crux of the issue, that we're not actually putting it centre and front of what we do. There's too much cricket being played and it's being pushed and squeezed. And we need to put it in the summer months when it's going to be played. But until we get to that point, we're always going to have these debates about quality. We're going to have these debates about structures until we put it front and centre. And hopefully now Key's in, they're saying they're having the red ball review. They say they're going to prioritise it. Then they're going to have to really back that up. And the only way I can see them backing that up is by getting rid of a competition. That's it, because you play too much cricket. Simple as that.
Which one are you getting rid of then?
Well, we're not going to get rid of the 100 because that's it's an anomaly. Nobody else plays the bloody thing, but it's an anomaly. You'd have to get rid of the 50-over competition or play it as a cup competition to make more space. That's what you're going to have to do because it's at the moment there's far too much cricket. You know, we play four competitions and you know get four competitions in what is 5 months. It's madness. Nowhere else does that in the world, and we're doing it because we're insatiable about. Well, Tom Harrison was insatiable about making as much money as possible and getting these huge contracts in TV. And at the same time, the game is disintegrating in front of his eyes.
But why don't we play the 50-over game in April? I mean, it doesn't have that priority as far as I'm concerned. If the weather affects it, you've got a reduced game, so be it. We've got shorter formats, it can cope. For me, it's easier. I think the shorter form is much more suited to the more variable weather in April and at the end of the summer.
The other issue is that most players don't... I mean, in the past, they used to learn one-day cricket and 50-over cricket. They learn the one-day cricket and 20-over cricket and just transfer it to 50-over cricket now. Mm-hmm. So to a certain degree, it's becoming a redundant almost format. I mean, there was talk about it in the past getting rid of it, but I don't think they should get rid of it, personally.
There was a lot of talk about it, and then England won the World Cup, and it kind of...
Yeah, then it all disappeared, didn't it? But most players learn in 2020 just transfer the skills to 50-over. Yeah. So, you know...
I've got to admit, the format that I... interest me least is the 50 over. I love the 4-day stuff because that has a narrative going through it all. I think the 50 over is kind of has become kind of caught in the middle between T20 and County Championship and has lost its identity to a degree. And I wouldn't go against having a knockout tournament or something like that in April or something like that, just to involve maybe the minor counties and to make it a little bit more exciting. But
it's the format that's most relatable to most weekend cricketers. Mm. So there's value to it. I mean, I don't know. I'm not aware of too many 2020 competitions, certainly not widely played at weekends. So if we're trying to keep everybody playing basically the same game, there is merit in keeping the 40-50 over game because it's what we're all playing at the weekend.
Final question. New Zealand taking on England, 3 test match series. What's the score going to be, Phil?
Well, we'll lose Lord's test match because we always do. I'm just looking at our bowling attack. I'm struggling to see us take 20 wickets more than once this series. So I'm thinking it might be one all on a drawn test.
How about you, Mark?
I think this test series is really hard to call, to be honest with you. England could get a bounce factor. Anderson could be worried. So, I mean, New Zealand have shown a little bit of a sign of decline recently. They drew at home to Bangladesh. They've had a little bit of a shake. But Jameson is a great bowler, though. I'm going to stick my neck out and I say it's going to be a brave new dawn and England are going to win this test series.
Blimey. I've got a horrible feeling New Zealand will win it myself. I'm going to go 2-1 New Zealand. But we will find out, won't we, over the next few weeks. It's played throughout the month of June, 2 fairly early on in June, and then 1 bringing up the rear towards the end of June as well, Headingley. So looking forward to that, seeing test match action back in the UK. Then we've got India to follow, and then South Africa coming in towards the end of the summer as well. Mark and Phil, I'm sure I'll speak to you about all of that and more as we go through the rest of the summer. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And thanks everybody out there for watching as well. And we have been the Cricket Badger Podcast. I've been James, he's been Phil, he's been Mark, and we'll see you again very soon indeed. Cheers, everybody.
Sports Social Podcast Network.